Well, Chumash Bereishis continues to move forward, and we do our best to move forward with it. And we are this week taking a look again at Parshas Vayetze. And I would like to present what I found to be really a fascinating idea and vista, in fact, into the lives of the Avos. And it comes through the Chasam Sofer. And as we'll see, he gave us an idea which is possible to develop. In today's terminology, he gave us a bull to run with. And we'll begin our discussion by taking a look at Yaakov's neder, which he took upon awakening from his amazing dream with the ladder. And towards the end of the neder, that is in Perek Kaf Ches, Pasuk Kaf and Kaf Aleph, let us see. And the Pasuk reads, Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor. Yaakov took this vow, saying, Im yiyeh Elokim imadi, if Hashem will be with me, Ushmarani baderech hazeh asher nochi holech, and will protect me in this journey, this way that I'm going, v'nosan li lechem nechol ubegad lilbosh, provide for my needs. Yaakov asks for very modest things in the event HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided him with much, much more. But his request is simply for lechem nechol ubegad lilbosh. V'shavti v'shalom pasuk kaf aleph. V'shavti b'shalom el beis avi. I will come back in peace to my father's house. And then the final words of the pasuk are very intriguing. V'haya Hashem li l'elokim, Hashem will be for me as a God. And in fact, Mefarshim differ even before we get to a detailed understanding of this phrase as to whether this phrase is still part of what Hashem will do for him or what Yaakov is already offering on his part. Is this already his neder? Until now, pasuk kaf aleph are all the things that Hashem is doing for him. Hashem is protecting him. Hashem is providing for him. Hashem is bringing him back. So these final words, vaya Hashem li elokim, is that also something Hashem is doing for him? With his response beginning in pasuk kaf beis, va'evan azos asher shamti matzeva, this place will be beis elokim. That's how Rashi explains. But there are other Mefarshim, Ramban and others, who explain that the words Vahaya Hashem li l'elokim are part of what Yaakov is accepting. But what is he accepting? What is the meaning of Yaakov saying at a certain point, I will accept Hashem to be as my God? Presumably, that's something that he's always been doing, and certainly something that he wish to continue to be doing prior to that point, up to and including, not specifically at that point. And the Sforno has a most illuminating comment on these, again, enigmatic words, Vahya Hashem li l'elokim. And we note, of course, by way of preface, that the two names, I mean, they're two names of Hashem, but as we know, they have quite different connotations. The name of Yudke Vavke is a name of Rachamim, the name Elokim is a name of Din, as is discussed and established in many different settings by a different Mefarshim. And therefore, Vahaya Hashem li l'elokim, on a certain level, is something of a transition. Because the Midah Rachamim, the attribute of mercy, and Midah Sadin, the attribute of justice, are not exactly the same. And that's the background to this comment of Sforno. And Sforno, of course, true to form, writes briefly, but says everything that he needs to say. Kilomar. Hineni mikabel olai me'ata. I will accept upon myself from now, she'akel yisparach hamerachem, that Hashem, who is merciful, yiye li l'elokim v'yisneheg imi b'midas hadin, will be for me as Elokim and will relate to me with midas hadin. As if to say, what the Sforno is saying is that if Hashem does all those things for me, then I accept that when I come back, Hashem will then shift, in a sense, from relating to me with Midas HaRachamim, represented by the name Yudke Vavke, and begin or move to relate to me B'Midas HaDin. And these words are still somewhat obscure, somewhat elusive. Specifically, we may ask, what is it that will happen at that time? Why is it that Yaakov is waiting for that time? What's behind the timing of that transition? At that point, when Hashem brings me back, then I accept the move from Hashem relating to me with mercy to relating to me with the harsher approach of Din. Well, let's leave that just for a moment and move forward to the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, which has with it a very well-known statement of Chazal, and Rashi quotes it. But as we'll see, the Chasam Sofer has a somewhat different angle on what's behind it. Vayeshev begins, of course, with Vayeshev, the beginning of Perek Lamed Zayin. Vayeshev Yaakov, the Pasuk states, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz mugurei aviv, be'eretz kena'an. That's a very simple-sounding Pasuk, just setting the scene, Yaakov's dwelling, where his father lived, in the land of Canaan. But as we will see, and as we know, there's a lot to say about these words, Vayeshev Yaakov. And moreover, it's interesting that the Pasuk describes his setting in two ways, even though they're exactly the same. Where does Yaakov dwell? Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, where his father lives. Well, where is that? Be'eretz Canaan. We know that Yitzhak is famous for never having left Eretz Canaan, which means if you tell me Eretz Canaan, that's where his father lives. If you tell me the place where his father lives, that's Eretz Canaan. But the Pasuk tells me both, Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, Be'eretz Canaan. That's somewhat wordy. And to get to the statement of Chazal in the Medrash, Vayeshev Yaakov, amazingly, although the Pasuk describes it as a narrative, as a description, but the Medrash sees within it more a wish of Yaakov, and moreover, a wish that was not fully granted. For Vayeshev has a connotation of being settled. And thus, the Medrash says, Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to lead a settled life. I'm not sure what a settled life looks like for Yaakov. I'm sure it's busier than most of our busy lives, but nonetheless, whatever it means for him, Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. But he was unable to do so, as we know. The very next episode is Yosef, and there's a lot of trouble until for a year, many, many years. Which means that this wish was not granted to Yaakov. Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. But it didn't happen. And the question is, what is behind Yaakov's wish to dwell in serenity, to dwell in, be settled? And what is behind the fact that it's not possible? And Chasam Sofer says there is something very specific to Yaakov himself that's behind his wish and to his situation, which is behind it, the fact that it could not be granted under those circumstances. And Chasam Sofer says as follows. We know that each of the Avos, we've discussed this on a number of occasions, and it's, each of the Avos has a certain characteristic. They bring in a certain key quality, Jewish quality, into the world in terms of midos. Avram is the midah of chesed, full of kindness, chesed la Avram. Yitzhak, on the other hand, somewhat more reserved, somewhat more introverted, somewhat more disciplined in that way. That's the focus there. Pachad Yitzhak, what's called, or Gevuras Yitzhak, or Midas Hadin, they're all ways of saying the same thing. Yitzhak operates more and does things in the exacting way of Midas Hadin. What about Yaakov, after all? We have right and we have left. We have chesed, kindness, and we have din, justice. What else is there? The right and left are taken. But of course, there's the middle. And the middle is where Yaakov is. And his middah is known also by a number of names. It's called Tiferes, it's called Emes, and it's called Rachamim. That's very interesting, because Rachamim, we normally group together with Chesed. They're both on the right. But that's not exactly so. Chesed, in a sense, is unqualified and unequivocal giving. That's pure right. And then, of course, justice is no free lunch, and that's all the way on the left. And then you have Midas HaRachamim in the middle, which is it's kindness, but there are rules. So it almost partakes of qualities of both chesed and din. It's not purely free. It is a great deal of consideration be given to the person, a great deal of quarter, but there are rules. But nonetheless, even as we put it in the center, it's not exactly in the center. Rachamim, of course, is clearly tending towards chesed. So it's right of center, to use that term in a pure sense. And those are the middos of the avos. Okay, well, how does this relate to us? Says Chasam Sofer, there is a concept which runs throughout Torah of midah keneged midah. Like for like, measure for measure. The way a person is, that's how they are to him in terms of heaven. And so now, says Chasam Sofer, each of the avos introduces and lives his life, and this is his way, and this is his personality, and this is his characteristic and his contribution with a certain midah. That's the midah that Shamayim relates to him, midah keneged midah. Which means, as we know, Avram's experiences are quite different than Yitzchak's. Avram is well respected, extremely successful the whole time, wherever he goes. And the reason why is because Avram represents the midah of chesed, and therefore midah keneged midah, Hashem relates to him with chesed. Yitzchak, his din, and of course in the end we need them all, but each Av embodies one of them and personifies one of them. So Yitzchak's midah is midah sadin, and therefore his life is actually tougher. And Hashem relates to him, b'midah sadin. And finally we come to Yaakov. And Yaakov, his midah is rachamim, and therefore, if his midah is rachamim, all things being equal, and in terms of the formula that we have laid down, he should expect that midah keneged midah, Hashem should have rachamim with him. Otherwise known as Bikesh Yaakov Leshet Bashalva. He wishes to lead a serene life, things should go well for him. Now we understand where that's coming from. His midah is rachamim, midah keneged midah, Hashem should have rachamim with him. Well, it sounds good, but it didn't happen. But why not? The answer, says Chasam Sofer, is the situation is more complex than that. It's more layered than that, for the simple reason that the prime personality, whoever the Av is, he will dominate and he will determine the way that things are, not only for him, but also for his surroundings. As if to say, first on the scene was Avram. Avram is midas chesed, not only for him, but for all of his surroundings. That being the case, even when Yitzchak is born, and Yitzchak has his own midah, but that midah doesn't express itself independently as long as he's under the auspices, shall we say, as long as he's under the aegis, as long as he's under the umbrella of chesed l'Avram. Avram begets a reaction from heaven, not only for him, but for also his surroundings, including Yitzchak, who has his own din. So one could almost say that the reaction to Yitzchak's din, midah keneged midah, is in abeyance. It's in holding, as long as Avram is there, because Avram has set the tone, and even Yitzchak is a beneficiary of that. Indeed, right? Things do not get difficult for Yitzchak until Avram passes away. And it's interesting to note that after the passing of Avram, the terminology of the pasuk in Parshas Chayisara, Vayhi acharei mos Avraham, Vayevarech Elokim es Yitzchak beno. We see that that Hashem begins to relate to Yitzchak as Elokim with the passing of Avram, because now the first father has passed on. Yitzchak now becomes the dominant personality, and now his midah can express itself, and midah keneged midah, vayivarech Elokim es Yitzchak. And the same relationship between Avram and Yitzchak translates in the next generation between Yitzchak and Yaakov, which means that Yaakov, this is back to Chasam Sofer, would like Leshe Bashalva, because he's a rachamim person, and he would like a response of rachamim, but it couldn't happen. It didn't happen. And why did it not happen? The pasuk begins by Yeshev Yaakov, and what he wanted, and then proceeds to explain why it couldn't happen. Because he was Be'eretz Migurei Aviv. He was in the land of, and what does Migurei mean? The word Magor means to live. But magor is also an expression of fear. Magor, upachat. Be'eret mugurei aviv means he was in a land which was influenced by mugurei aviv, by pachad Yitzchak, which means that his own midah, Yaakov's, could not express itself now. Rather, he was under the influence of midah of pachad Yitzchak. That's why it couldn't happen. Well, all of this is very interesting. In fact, it's actually fascinating, because it gives us now this vista to see how each Av has his own way, and it determines the way that they relate to him. There's just one very simple question, and that is, why is all of this being discovered by Yaakov so late in the game, in Parshas Vayeshev, when he's already, you know, past 100 years old? He's lived in Yitzchak's country for many years. His formative years were there. By formative, I mean the first 60 years. That's a long time. Which means that he should already know by now that his own personal characteristics, notwithstanding, they will not beget a reaction as long as he's with Yitzchak. And if he knew that from way back when, from the first 60 years, why would he think that things would be any different, so that as he's hoping, by Yeshev Yaakov, maybe it'll be different, and in the end it isn't different, because you're back with Yitzchak now. So what's behind this later chapter in terms of what Yaakov hopes might be, and in the end is not so? Well, I think the answer is as follows. Chasam Sofer has told us that the reason why Yaakov could not have a reaction to his own midah of rachamim, because he lives in the land of Pachad Yitzchak, Be'eretz Mugurei Aviv. The implication is, let us see theoretically and then practically, the implication is, if you would only not to be in the same land as Yitzchak, if you would only not be in the same country as Eretz Mugurei Aviv, could it be that his personal quality could beget midah keneged midah? It sounds like it would. Not only does it sound like it would, it did. The last number of years, the 22 years that Yaakov has been away from home, so he, by leaving Eretz Canaan, he left the reach of the sphere of the influence of Yitzchak, and he finally moved into a domain where his own midah could express itself. And so it did. He experienced great, great kindness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever Lavan tries to do, Hashem allows him to reverse it. Lavan tries to trick him the whole time. He emerges incredibly successful. He's built an amazing family, almost all of the Shvatim. So he has experienced a great outpouring of favor from heaven. How did that happen? Because he was outside the domain of Pachad Yitzchak, his own midah was able to express itself. And that actually gives us deeper insight into Hashem's promise to Yaakov as he leaves. Because actually, it's a great chiddush. It's a new development. Hashem is saying, you know what? I'm going to help you. I'm going to look after you in this very midas harachamim way. It's never happened before, because you've never been in a way that you could establish that type of relationship. But now you can. And that's why Hashem says to him in Pasuk Tetzvav, V'hinei anochi imach, I'll be with you. U'shmarticha b'chol asher telech, I'll protect you wherever you go. V'ashivasicha l'adam hazos, I'll bring you back, it will all be okay. That's a new world order as far as Yaakov is concerned. And in fact, even if we look at the nuances of Hashem's message, we can detect this. It's very interesting, as Mefarshim note, we look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. This is the first words spoken to him by Hashem. Perek Kafches, Pasuk Yud Gimel. We've got the ladder, we've got the Malachi Elokim, Olam B'yordim Bo, whatever that means, and then Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'hinei Hashem Nitzav Alav. Hashem is standing over him, Vayomar, and says, and let's now watch these words carefully. Ani Hashem. I am Hashem, Elokei Avram Avicha, the God of Avram, your father, Elokei Yitzchak, and the God of Yitzchak. And that is a very interesting introduction, because conspicuous in his absence is the term Avicha with reference to Yitzchak. It's asymmetrical. Avram is called Avicha. Yitzchak is called Yitzchak. But of course, Yitzhak is also Yaakov's father. In fact, Yitzhak is more Yaakov's father than Avram is. Avram is only his father because Yitzhak is. He's his grandfather. And therefore the question is, why is it that when Hashem introduces himself, he does so in that way whereby he's emphasizing Yaakov's relationship to Avram more than his closer relationship to Yitzhak? That's a good shaila. And the Shalah Kodesh asks this question. And the Shalah answers, the reason why is because at this point, Hashem's relationship with Yaakov is about to enter a mode where Yaakov has more in common with Avram than he does with Yitzhak. Avram, again, is pure kindness. Yitzhak is pure justice. Until now, Yaakov has been totally under the sphere of Pachad Yitzhak. But now he's moving to his own middle, which is much, much closer to that of Avram. And therefore, because he's moving to a way, and Hashem will relate to him in a way that's much closer to the way he related to Avram, that's why Yaakov's connection with Avram is emphasized here, and his connection with Yitzhak is de-emphasized. Avram is Avicha, and Yitzhak is Yitzhak. Very interesting. And he promises his protection. All of this gives us now deeper insight into the background of the Sforno's comment. It's a tapestry here, because the Sforno, again, when Yaakov says, when I come back, Hashem will protect me, there, bring me back, and when I come back, Vahaya Hashem li lelokim, those words we mentioned before. And the Sforno explained it means, I will accept that Hashem, who has been relating to me, Yudke Vavke, with Rachamim, will come to relate to me, B'midas Hadin, Vahaya Hashem li lelokim. And our question was, well, why then? What's so special about that time that he would transition? But now we understand Yaakov is not accepting upon himself to change from Rachamim to Din when he comes back. He is accepting upon himself to return from Rachamim to Din. He has been living under Din the whole time because he's been with Yitzhak. He now has a certain time where he is vouchsafed and promised protection, Midas HaRachamim, but he accepts that things will go back to the way they were at that time because he'll come back to be with Yitzhak. That's really what's behind that shift. It will be shifting back to Midas HaDin. But what's fascinating is, if we look carefully at Hashem's terms, so to speak, of the next few years, of the next time, and Yaakov's terms, they do not exactly coincide. Very interesting. That is to say, Hashem says, once again, in Pasuk Tesvav, Perek Kafches, Pasuk Tesvav. V'ne'onachimach, I'll be with you. Ushmaticha b'chol asher telech, I'll guard you wherever you go. V'ashivosicha el ha'adom hazos, I will bring you back to this land. Ki lo ezavcha adar shemasisi eses shedibartelach, I will not abandon you until I've done that. Which sounds like, but once you're back, you're on your own. Which makes sense, because that's Midas Hadin. But what that means is Hashem is saying that he will give Yaakov this special protection, but then he'll bring you back to the land. And it sounds like as soon as you're back in the land, so then protection is over. Which actually makes sense, because when you're back in the land, you're back in Eretz Megurei Aviv, the land of Yitzhak. But when we go back to Yaakov's terms of reacceptance, so to speak, in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, he says, V'shavti b'shalom el beis avi, I'll come back in peace to my father's house. And then, v'yashem li lelukim. Now your father's house is not the same as your father's country. Your father's country is the whole of Eretz Kanaan. His house is his house. And it really sounds that what Yaakov is saying is, I accept to return to a relationship of Midas Hadin when I come back to my father's house, but not necessarily when I come back to his country. And of course, the nafkemina, so to speak, the differential is as long as he's in the land of Israel, but not living in his father's house. Yaakov somehow is accepting or stating that he doesn't yet accept a return to Midas Hadin, but Hashem seems to have said it's dependent upon returning to the country. Perhaps, and it's not clear in the Psukim as to why Yaakov changed, perhaps it's a request on his part. Perhaps it's a petition, as if to say, although you told me that you'll protect me until you bring me back to the land, is it okay, or this is his request, that the special protection continue until I come back to his house? That is Yaakov's request. And that now will give us further insight as we return to Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yaakov, the Medrash told us, Yaakov wished to live in serenity. Why? Why did he wish that? Why did he think that was possible? Does he not know that he's back in Yitzchak country? Yes, but what his wish was, that his request would be accepted, that Hashem will have rachamim on him until he comes back to Yitzchak's house. But as long as he's not in his household, even if he's in the same country, he should be able to live b'shalva. That's where it's coming from, because he hasn't come back to Beis Avi. But in the end, it was denied him, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terms did not waver. And he did not grant him this request. And Hashem says, it's until you come back to the land. As the Pasuk says, if you're Be'eretz Mugurei Aviv, then you can't live B'shalva as long as Yitzhak is there. And so again, there's many layers in terms of why Yaakov was expecting things would be different this time round, but why in the event they were not. And I think there is room for one final piece here. Because we've been almost parlaying between Vayetze, when terms were set, and Vayeshev, when Yaakov was hoping things would be different. In the middle, there's an entire parsha called Vayishlach. And Vayishlach can actually tell us a great deal about whether it was realistic for Yaakov to expect that things would have changed. Or should he already see that no, they haven't changed. And this gives us now a new way of looking at Yaakov as he's preparing to encounter Esav and his men. And his first experience upon returning to Eretz Canaan is to send that message to Esav. And it doesn't seem good, because he gets the message back that Esav is coming with 400 men. And they're not coming to make a kiddush for him. I mean, they're coming, they mean business. And this now is almost like the testing ground for Yaakov, as if to say, he doesn't know whether his request for rachamim, he hopes, has been accepted, because he's not in Yitzhak's home. And therefore, if we look at the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, when he receives that news, which is in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Ches, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Ches, it says, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od, Vayetzelo, Yaakov was very afraid. Vayetzelo, and he was pained. He was distressed. What is he afraid of, and what is he distressed about? Presumably he's distressed about the various things that he's afraid of. But why are they two expressions? Because he's afraid of Esav, and he's distressed in the sense that maybe that means that his prayer was not accepted, which means he's kind of on his own, as Midas Hadin. And it's very interesting, as we know, at that time, Yaakov prepared himself for three things. War, in the way that he did, dividing the camps. He gave a present to Esav, and he davened. And it's very interesting to look at his tefillah, because he says, as we see in Pasuk Yud, Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud, this is his tefillah, Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov says, Elokei Avi Avraham, Velokei Avi Yitzchak. This is him, almost like this is the mirror image of Hashem's introduction to him when he left. But we see that at this juncture, unlike what Hashem said to him, where he only mentioned Avicha with regards to Avram and not with Yitzchak, but Yaakov mentions Avi with reference to both of them, because that is exactly what he is unsure of. Perhaps I'm yet connected to Avram in the way that I was, but perhaps I'm actually once again reconnected with Yitzchak because I'm back in his country. I don't know. And yet, after all that, we find that the meeting or the confrontation with Esav went relatively well, considering the alternatives. And the pasuk says he ran towards him and he hugged him and he kissed him. And even though there's dots on top of him kissing him, because he didn't kiss him with all of his heart, under the circumstances, I think Yaakov was quite happy with what he got. And he didn't consider it a bad outcome that Esav didn't hug him with all of his heart. Half of his heart is also fine, because the alternative is Esav trying to kill him. And that's very interesting, because what does that mean now? at his time of fear, he wasn't sure, is Hashem still having rachamim on him? But now it seems like he is, because Esav, as the Sifrei famously says about Esav, Rashi quotes it, halacha hi, it's a halacha, Esav son of Yaakov. It's the one halacha that he keeps. Lemahadrin. So he has ingrained within him, it's his nature, but it was thwarted somehow, it was diverted. But what does that mean? Isn't that a sign of rachamim? Sounds like it is. And moreover, there is even another indication that Yaakov is receiving special treatment, special divine favor. Because at the end of the parsha, and I think by that stage in Vayishlach, we're so worn out by all the drama of Yaakov and Esav, we perhaps don't pay as close attention as we should. But actually, at the end of Vayishlach in Perek Lamed Vav, we find something quite amazing. In Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Vav and Zion. Because the Pasuk describes how there came a time when Yaakov and Esav could not live in the same country. Because there just wasn't enough pasture for them. It's interesting. This almost like sounds like an echo of the situation with Lot, right? Lot's shepherds, and there wasn't enough for both of them. That's really what the Pasuk says. Pasuk Zayin, Kayaruch Hashem Rav Mishevet Yachdav. Their possessions were too vast for them to dwell together. V'lo yachla eretz mugureim nasesosam mipnei miknehem. The land just couldn't hold both of them. So you're in a situation, if just to think about it, and from the outset, Yaakov and Esav, the land is not big enough for the both of them. One of them has to move. Who's going to move? Mi nitche mipnei mi. Who's going to be the one to say, it's okay, I'll move? Esav is the person least likely to ever say, it's okay, I'll move. If there's no, especially as he's been here for the last 20 odd years. And he's Esav. So if there's not enough room for the both of them, so Yaakov will move. And amazingly, Esav says, it's crowded here, you know what? I'll move. But that's a historic event. It is so atypical of Esav. Pasuk Vav, Vayikach Esav, Esnashav, Esbonav, Esbonosav. He takes his wives and his children, Veskolnashav, Speso, Vesmikneu, his whole household, he ups and moves. Vayelech al Eretz, Mipnei Yaakov Aviv. Just a simple reading of the Psukim. He says, it's difficult for both of us, it's okay, you stay here and I'll move. What a thing to hear from Esav. All of this gives us to understand that, or perhaps gives Yaakov to understand that what is behind this? How can he explain it? Maybe he is really still receiving rachamim from Hashem, even though he's back in Eretz Canaan. How can you explain it? Perhaps that means that his petition was accepted. He's not back in Yitzchak's house. And that is the end of Vayishlach, which leads straight into the beginning of Vayeshev. So now we have an even further understanding of what's behind Yaakov wanting to dwell in serenity. Not only was he hoping that his prayer had been accepted, that even when he's back in Israel, as long as he's not back home with Yitzchak, Hashem should have rachamim on him, but he has received indications in that direction from recent events. All that leads to Vayeshev Yaakov, but the event, it was not to be, because he was the Eretz Megorei Aviv. So this is, I believe, a fascinating idea, and again, inspired and spawned by this comment of the Chasam Sofer, but once he unleashes it, it really spans all of these parshas, a very, very interesting way, a new way, in fact, of looking at the relevant events in this light. Well, having spoken quite a bit about the beginning of the parsha, I'd like to move to the end. And in a sense, it also, it's a palindrome. It brackets the parsha in this way. Because when Yaakov has finally taken leave of Lavan, the pasuk says, final two psukim, that is in Perek Lamed Beis, pasuk Beis, the final two psukim of the parsha. V'Yaakov halach ladarko. Yaakov went on his way. Right? Lavan goes his way. Yaakov goes his way. They never see each other again. V'yifku uvo malachei Elokim. And then he's met by malachim. And moreover, the final pasuk, Vayomer Yaakov, Kasher Am Yaakov says, Machaneh Elokim Zeh. This is a machaneh of Malachim, machaneh of God. Vayikra Shem Amakim Ehu Machanayim. He calls the place Machanayim, two camps. What's the background to these angels? And how does it become two camps? Well, Rashi famously tells us that Yaakov is now transitioning back from Eretz Yisrael from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael. And this, therefore, is the opposite direction to something that we know, experience in the beginning of the Parsha. In the beginning of Vayetze, when he has the dream and he sees the angels going up and down, and of course Rashi has his question, Klal Godel in life, what goes up must come down. Unless you're an angel. In which case, you start up. So it's really what goes down must come up. Rashi's bothered by the fact that it says Malachei Elokim Olim V'Yordimbo, because if they start at the beginning, it should have been Yordim V'Olimbo. That's an interesting shaila. That's a Yekish question. Okay, Rashi has German associations. And it's interesting parenthetically that his grandson, the Rashbam, commenting on the same pasuk, has such an easygoing response. He says, Al derech hapshat ein ledaktik. In terms of pshat, it's okay, up and down, we get the message. The Rashbam knows full well that Rashi was very disturbed by this. And part of what he's saying is that in his personal opinion, he doesn't consider it to be a pshat question, which is a fascinating machlokas in itself, because that means that the bar for what is considered a pshat issue is different, depending on who you are. And for Rashi, that's already a problem. For Rashbam, that's not yet a problem. Interesting. They're not even arguing what the pshat is. They're arguing, is there a pshat issue here? In any event, Rashi says, so why go up and then go down? Because it was different groups of malachim. The group that had been with Yaakov so far in Eretz Yisrael was going up. And then the new group came down, in malachim of Chutz La'aretz. Okay? That's what happened, the changing of the guard, as we would say, back over there. And that's what happened when he left. And when he came back, it's the reverse. As if to say he's about to now change from his Chutz La'aretz angels back to be accompanied by his Eretz Yisrael angels. That's the two machanos. Machane of Malachi Chutz La'aretz and Machane Malachim of Eretz Yisrael. That's Rashi's comment. And it's sourced in the Midrash. It's very interesting to note that the Ramban has issues, sees difficulty in this Rashi. And again, the Rashi is a Midrash. And if we would sum up the Ramban's problem with this whole approach, it's very simply that, as he will demonstrate, Yaakov at this stage is nowhere near Eretz Canaan. He is still way in Chutz La'aretz, which means it's not yet appropriate for there to be this changing. And why do I say that, says Ramban, that Yaakov is still quite deep into Chutz La'aretz, it's nowhere near the border. I'll tell you why. Firstly, says Ramban, if you follow Yaakov in next week's Parsha, in Parshas Vayishlach, you will see that he passes by a place which is called Ma'avar Yabok. Ma'avar Yabok, that's where he takes all the possessions overnight. Ma'avar Yabok, that's where he has his confrontation with Esau's Malach. Okay. Where is Yabok mentioned elsewhere in the Torah? Says Ramban, if you look in Devarim, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tet Zayin, you will see that it's one of the borders of the lands of Ammon. It means Ammon is yet way to the east of Eretz Canaan. And that's where Yaakov is. That's not the border of Eretz Yisrael. That's the border of the land of Ammon. Moreover, says Ramban, he hasn't yet even passed through Edom yet, where he sends his messages to Esav, which is also to the east, right, southeast of Eretz Canaan. He's not near the border yet. And finally, says Ramban, you know how else I know that Yaakov is not yet entering Eretz Canaan? Because when he does, the pasuk says so. And that pasuk is in the middle of next week's parsha, in Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Yud Ches. Let's have a look at what it says there. Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches. a lot has happened. We're halfway through the Parsha. He's met Esav and they parted ways. And then the Pasuk reads, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem Asher Be'eretz Kanaan. He comes to Shechem in Canaan. This is the first time Eretz Canaan has been mentioned in conjunction with his return. He's finally back. on his return from Paddan Aram. Which means until that point, he hasn't yet re-entered Eretz Canaan. And for all of these reasons and all of this buttresses and supports, my contention, says Ramban, that at this stage he's not yet in the place where that transition of Chutz La'aretz Malachim to Eretz Yisrael Malachim would be appropriate. And for that reason, Ramban, based on these very solid questions, has a different understanding of what Machanaim is and what the Machane Elokim, but it's not about, he's still in Chutz La'aretz, even after this point. It's not about the transition. Very interesting. Now, as we know, if you ask a question on Rashi, there will be people to respond. They are Mefarshei Rashi. They are the super commentaries on Rashi. And they tend to have something to say in situations such as this. And the one who takes on Ramban's questions in this instance is the foremost among the Mefarshei Rashi, Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mizrahi, the Re'im. And the Mizrahi takes them on one by one. Firstly, says Mizrahi, Ramban brought a proof that Yaakov does not enter Eretz Canaan until much later on, because it is only in Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches, do we find mention of Eretz Canaan. Sounds like prior to that stage, including everything from between now and then, he's still in Chutz La'aretz. Says the Mizrahi, not necessarily, and in fact, if you take a look even further in Vayishlach, that is to say, in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Vav, which is again two prokim later, it says, Vayavo Yaakov Luza, he comes to Luz we know, Betel, Asher Be'eretz Canaan, which is in Eretz Canaan. So the Mizrahi, and it gets to, it sounds too simple, but the Mizrahi basically says, if you take the Torah's usage of the term Asher Be'eretz Canaan, as if to say he's just arrived, then why would it say it twice in Vayishlach? Did he arrive twice? Between Lamed Gimel and Lamed Hei, he left again? No. Which means whatever Asher Be'eretz Canaan means, whatever it's coming to emphasize, it does not signify that he has just now arrived back again in Eretz Canaan. And in fact, you can see very clearly, says Mizrahi, that if you come to Eretz Canaan from Haran, which, of course, Yaakov has done, Shechem will not be the first place that you meet. And the way I know that's not your point of entry into Eretz Canaan. And the way I know that, says Mizrahi, is because go back to Avram. We've seen someone come from Haran to Eretz Canaan. Avram did it. And he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, and Hashem appeared to him, etc. And then a later pasuk says, Vayavor Avram ba'aretz ad mekom Shechem. He's passing through them until he gets to Shechem. Which means that if you come from Haran, you see clearly from Avram, you'll be in the land a good while, passing through, before you get to Shechem. So Shechem is not going to be the first time that you enter, the point at which you enter Eretz Canaan. And with reference to the Ramban's first two questions, namely, he still has to meet with Esav, and who's on the east, right, in Edom. What about Yabok? That's also on the east by Ammon. Sounds like he's still to the east. Not yet. Says Mizrahi, there's a very basic point here. And that is, Ramban has assumed that Yaakov first met Esav in Edom before he entered Eretz Canaan. Edom and Ammon, and all of that, as we know from Chumash, Bamidbar, and Devarim, they're all to the southeast. To the southeast of Eretz Canaan. Why would you be going that way? The Ramban apparently understands, and in fact he does understand, that Haran is to the southeast of Eretz Canaan. But the Mizrahi is of the understanding, as are many others, that it's to the northeast, which means it may very well be that Yaakov actually re-entered Eretz Canaan before he then went to Esav in Edom. And in fact, that seems to be corroborated by the words of the Medrash. There is an opinion in the Medrash, Bereishis Rabbah, which is somewhat critical of Yaakov sending this message to Esav. Why? It quotes a pasuk in Mishlei. It's a very pasuk which, when you hear it, you see the point straight away. Machzik ba'oznei kelev. If you take hold of the ears of a dog, misabe al riv lo lo. That's similar to a person who gets into a fight which he didn't really need to. As if to say, if the dog is walking by and everything's fine, the last thing you want to do is to pick it up by the ears, because you're basically asking for trouble. Let walking dogs walk. And the Medrash amazingly invokes that idea with reference to Yaakov, because and says that there was no need for Yaakov to reach out to Esav. Now that's very interesting. We were never aware that Yaakov had any choice. When he's coming back, he's got to confront Esav. Says the Medrash, no, he did not need to confront Esav. Except says Mizrachi, but if you're passing through his land, it sounds like you do need to say something, otherwise there'll be trouble. But rather, it seems like Esav was to the southeast there in Edom, or around thereabouts. Yaakov came in from the north. The two never need to meet. That's why it was considered unnecessary, according to the Medrash. But that seems to confirm the idea that he came in from the north completely different. And then he exited again to Edom, in direction of Edom, and that's where he's by Mavar Yabok, etc. But those aren't things that he needed to take care of before coming back to Eretz Canaan. He came in first on the north, and when he did, that's the transition of the Malachim that Rashi is talking about. So this is quite a, on the one hand, it's a practical or geographical machlokas, shall we say, but positions are pitched on both sides. And then we come to a very different response on behalf of the Medrash, Rashi / the Medrash. Again, to summarize, the problem Ramban had is Rashi explains, or he quotes the Medrash, that the Machanaim were the changing of the guard, Malachim Chutz Laretz, taking leave, reaccepting Malachim of Eretz Yisrael. It sounds like he's on the border. It says Ramban, he's nowhere near the border. He's near Edom, he's near Ammon, in terms of the Ramban's question. That's nowhere near the border. Says the Paneach Roza, one of the great works on the Chumash from the Rishonim, actually, even if Ramban is right, and he was at that stage just coming into the land of Ammon and Edom and all of that, he's still on the border. That is not the border of Eretz Canaan as we know it now, but it is the border of Eretz Canaan in its fullest sense, because those lands of Edom and Ammon and Moab, they are the lands of the Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni. They are lands number 8, 9, and 10 that were promised to Avram. The original promise of Bris Ben Abisarim is for 10 lands. In the event, it became whittled down for the time being for 7. But those three, for various reasons, they stayed on the other side, and they're not Eretz Canaan proper, not now. But they are part of the original Haftacha for the future. And that's why, says Paneach Roza, even as he's come crossing the border to the land of Ammon, in the fullest sense of the word, he's coming into Eretz Canaan. And the Chasam Sofer quotes his Paneach Roza, and moreover adds that there is a Yesod of the Ramban himself. And the Ramban, as we know, there's a theme that runs through Chumash Bereishis. Masa Avos Siman Abanim. What happens to the fathers happens to the sons. The experiences of Bnei Yisrael have been pre-experienced by the Avos. And part of them is Golus and Geula. Parshas Vayetze, which is Yaakov's own personal Golus, is the Maisa Avos in many respects for Golus of the Jewish people. And when he comes back, says Ramban at the beginning of Vayishlach, it's Maisa Avos for the return of the Jewish people. Oh, so that's very interesting, says Chasam Sofer. Because if Yaakov here is pre-experiencing the return of the Jewish people, that is to say, in Yemos HaMashiach, so then the map of Eretz Yisrael is a Yemos HaMashiach map. And that then the Eretz Canaan now has the contours and now has the borders of the future. And the border is already as you cross into the land of Ammon. So that's a fascinating, a different approach, in a sense, endorsing all the geography of Ramban's question, but nonetheless explaining the background to Rashi's comment. Well, I'd like to conclude by returning to the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. We've been moving around using the Chumash quite a bit this evening. But if you go back to the very first pasuk, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana, Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, went to Haran. And of course, there's so much to say about this pasuk. Not only does it seem to be written much longer than it needed to be, because you could either just say he went to Haran, which means he must have left, or you could say he went from Be'er Sheva to Haran, as opposed to splitting into two. But moreover, the entire pasuk is seemingly a repetition, because we were already told in the end of Parshas Toldos that he went to Padan Aram. So the whole thing is a repetition and can be understood on many levels. The Medrash Rabbah has a rather enigmatic comment to make on this pasuk. It quotes a pasuk in Mishle, and the pasuk says, "Az telech lavetach darkecha." Then you will go with security. And says the Medrash, that's Yaakov, goes with security. So Mefarshim are wondering, it's an important pasuk in Mishle. I'm not sure what it adds to my understanding of Vayetze. Because if I had never seen that pasuk and I just read Vayetze, I know that Yaakov goes with security because Hashem promised him that he would take care of him. So that's the security. I can learn it from Vayetze. I don't need to outsource to Mishle. Well, as we know, Vayetze is its own type of transition for Yaakov. Without, at the risk of oversimplifying, Yaakov on this stage, until this stage, has been Ishtam Yoshev Aholim. He's been in the Yeshiva of Shem, he's been in the Yeshiva of Aver, and now he went back there in the intervening years. But as he goes to Lavan, so he's not going to Lavan, Lavan's not going to let him be a Yoshev Aholim. He's working for Lavan and he has to find his way. He's tending the flock and trying to outmaneuver Lavan in that way. It's a very different type of existence. And as we mentioned last week, it's because Yaakov is now taking over the abdicated role of Esav. So he needs to represent the entire future of the Jewish people. And some of them will be Ishtam Yoshev Aholim, and some of them will be in the field. And Yaakov needs to be the Av for both of them. And there's no avoiding that for him. But he does protect himself. He does take necessary precautions in the form of, before he leaves, another 14 years in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever. That's a long time. And that, moreover, is post. At the age of 63, has already been Ishtam Yeshiva Halim. But somehow, as whatever the difference qualitative is, in these 14 years, he does not leave without fortifying himself and without protecting himself with these years of Torah. And then he's ready. And what is it, if we may open up the question, what is it about the Torah that will protect him? Well, as we know, the Torah is a form of Hashem's will, a form of divine energy that is higher than matters of this world. And really the goal for Yaakov to succeed, and for all Jews after him to succeed in the world, is to be sure that he emerges into the world connected with the Torah that is higher than matters of this world. That will give him the vision, that will give him the insight, that will give him the fortitude and everything he needs in order to act correctly and meaningfully in all circumstances. The natural world is always referred to or associated with the number seven. Those are the 7 days of the week, and the Torah, representing a force beyond that, is always the number beyond seven, which even comes, for example, in Shavuos, where you have your 7 weeks, and then the day after, that's the day of Matan Torah. We find in the first of the Tehillim that we add on Shabbos morning, Psukei Dezimra, Hashamayim Resapim Kavod Kel, which speak about the natural world, Yom Yomi Abia Omer, etc. and so forth, until it gets to Torah Sashem Temima. And really, that pasuk of Tehillim is transitioning from the natural world and what it can give you, and then beyond that, Torah Sashem Temima. Says Maharal in the Sefer Teferes Yisrael, pardon me, it says Rabbeinu Bachya in the Sefer Kadah Kemach, if you note, there are 7 psukim of description of the natural world, and then pasuk number 8 is the beyond. Maharal himself in Teferes Yisrael explains that's why there's a famous Perek of Tehillim Kuf Yotes. It's famous because it's very long. People who finish Tehillim once a month, it takes 2 days just to get through that one perek of Tehillim. It has 176 psukim because there are 8 psukim for each letter of the Aleph Beis, because that is the perek about Torah, and therefore it everything in Torah is times 8 because it's beyond the 7 in that way. There is a remez here. We say that Yaakov, he first connected himself with that which is higher than the world of 7 before he went out into the harsh and unforgiving world. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is the wellspring of 7. The Sheva is the world. Be'er Sheva is the Torah. From a point of Be'er Sheva he went out. Vayele Charona. Charona from the word Charon. Anger. He went out into the harsh world. And that is what the Medrash says, the Sfasemes, is communicating or alluding to when it quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei, Az telech levetach dakecha. Then, it's been speaking about a person who's connected with Torah, who's imbued with Torah, Az telech levetach dakecha. What's so interesting about the word Az? Translated, it means then, whenever then is. You have to define context. But in our context, the word Az, the two letters are Aleph and Zion. Zion is 7, and behind it is the Aleph. Now the words Aleph before Zion is Be'er Sheva. It's that one force which is higher than the world of 7. And that's exactly what Yaakov did by stopping off in Be'er Sheva, that is to say, in the Torah, higher than the number 7 of the world. He was able to connect with the protection of Az Telech Levetach Dakecha. By putting the Aleph before his 7, he had protection as he went out into the world. And indeed, his experiences in Laban's house, which were not easy, were in their own way a form of spiritual ascension for him, because he is now ready to live correctly and meaningfully in all circumstances, including the grittiest of circumstances, together with Laban. And that is the difference between him and Laban. Conclude with the way the Meshech Chochma himself concludes the parsha. Towards the end of the parsha, the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, he's had his run-in with Laban. They say goodbye. Maybe they don't even say goodbye. They leave. They part ways. Pasuk Beis. Vayashkem Laban baboker. Vayina sheik levana v'levnosav. Okay, Laban, he gives a nice kiss to all of his grandchildren. Laban is still running for mayor. Vayivarech Hashem, he blesses them. Very nice. Yeah, we had enough nachas from his first blessing all those years ago. Vayelech, vayoshav Laban the Mekoma, and he returned to his place. Now that's such a seemingly innocuous phrase. But Meshech Chochma says it's actually a devastating phrase, because it's the sum total of Laban post Yaakov. As if to say, says Meshech Chochma, when you encounter a great person, it has an effect on you. When you encounter an inspiring person, it elevates you. And this is not just an encounter. But what if he stays with you? It changes. And if you're able to have an ongoing connection. And what if he lives with you? And what if he's Yaakov? And he's in your house for 20 years. One could only imagine how things would never be the same. How do you get down after an experience like that, after a period of life like that, 2 decades? The answer is, if you're Lavan, you just go home. If you looked at Lavan when you returned home, it's like Yaakov was never there. I mean, that is a skill. And that's what makes it, in a sense, the saddest pasuk of Vayetze. Exposed to Yaakov for so long, but Lavan is incapable of allowing himself in any way to be affected by Yaakov. Yaakov left, good riddance, and weiter, and back to whatever it was that he was doing. It's like Yaakov was never there. And what about Yaakov himself? In contrast, next pasuk, the Yaakov holach ledarko. Yaakov keeps going. As much as it's the converse. Lavan refused to be uplifted by Yaakov, and Yaakov refused to be pulled down by Lavan. Always moving forward, onwards, by Yifku bo malach Elokim. As the parsha concludes, we'll leave it over there for this evening.